Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I'd like to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Marla Baronic. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this virtual meeting of the Community Development Advisory Board, the advisory committee to the U.S. Department of Treasury's Community Development Institutions Fund, or CDFI Fund. I am Marla Baronic, the chair of the advisory board. I'd like to extend a special welcome to the advisory board members. I'd also like to welcome the members of the public who are joining us online. Thank you for your interest in the work of the CDFI Fund. As I mentioned during our last meeting, this is a particularly important time for this advisory board to be engaged. The CDFI certification process is being revamped as the CDFI Fund processes significant input that was collected through their request for information. Before the process was finalized, the advisory board wanted to be sure to provide our feedback via this public meeting. The CDFI industry has never been more relevant or more needed. We honor the fund's objectives of protecting the CDFI, supporting the growth and reach of CDFIs, fostering a diversity of CDFI types, activities, and geographies, and minimizing the burden of CDFIs while improving data collection and quality, and promoting efficiency for CDFI fund staff in rendering CDFI certification determination. At the same time, we felt it our duty to share feedback and input from individual board members to help ensure those objectives are met. This advisory board is statutorily mandated, and its purpose is to provide advice to the director of the CDFI fund on the activities of the CDFI fund. One way we do that is through the formation of subcommittees, and therefore we created a subcommittee focused on changes to CDFI certification. Today you'll hear from Michael Swack, who chaired our CDFI certification committee. Michael will provide a high-level overview of the work and propose recommendations from the subcommittee. I will then lead a discussion among the advisory board members, particularly answering any questions non-subcommittee members may have. After this deliberation, I will call for a vote on adopting the subcommittee's recommendations. After that, we'll hear from CDFI Fund Acting Director Marcia Siegel regarding CDFI certification implementation. Members of the viewing public can find the agenda at www.cdfifund.gov/CDAB under today's date. But first, I'd like to invite our Vice Chair, Dave Glazer, to say a few words. Dave?
Thank you, Marla, and good afternoon, everybody. It has been empowering to work with representatives from all types of CDFIs, as well as Acting Director Siegel on CDFI certification improvements. I'd like to extend our sincere thanks to all the members of the CDFI certification subcommittee for your diligent work over the last 2 months. Marla and I both appreciate your willingness to serve. I'd like to extend a special thank you to Michael Flack, who agreed to chair this subcommittee and drafted the recommendations after extensive input from all subcommittee members. The subcommittee members included Marla Baronic, myself, Patrice Kunesh, Harold Pettigrew, Michael Flack, and Darren Williams. In addition, when we formed this subcommittee at the beginning of June, we wanted to ensure that all segments of the CDFI industry were represented, so we invited two past advisory board members to join the subcommittee, both respected in the field. Bill Bynum, who is the founding CEO of Hope Credit Union, to represent credit unions, and Ray Moncrief, who is the Executive Vice President and COO of Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation, to represent venture funds. Again, I want to thank all of you for your time and effort over the last 2 months.
Thank you, Dave. I'd like to formally begin the meeting with the roll call of the advisory board. For the record, please note that both Seema Agnani and Dennis Alvord are both traveling and unable to join us today. And this May, Associate Administrator of Capital Access, Patrick Kelly, stepped down from his position at SBA. We are working with the SBA to identify a representative next step. As I call your name, please respond present. Wizipan Garyok. I don't believe Lizzie is with us. David Blazer.
Present.
Patrice Kunesh.
Present.
Harold Pettigrew.
Present.
Mia Pittman.
Present.
Graham Steele.
Present.
Michael Swack.
Present.
Darren Williams.
Present.
And from EDA, we have sitting in Craig Orsatti.
Present.
And I don't know if we have Bill Bynum and Ray Moncrief on the line. I'm sure we'll be hearing from them later. Having a quorum, I call this meeting of the Community Development Advisory Board to order, and we will now transition to our subcommittee presentation. I would now like to invite CDFI Certification Subcommittee Chair Michael Swack to deliver the subcommittee's recommendation memo.
Great. Thank you, Marla, and thank you, Dave. Hi, everybody. As Dave mentioned, this subcommittee was formed in June to give the members of this advisory board an opportunity to provide perspective on the proposed revisions to the CDFI certification application. And this has turned out to be a big issue, a lot of interest, who would have known. We formulated our recommendations after reviewing the CDFI certification presentation that was provided at our February meeting and looked at other resources on the CDFI Fund's public website, including almost all of the comments. We also had a meeting in June to discuss and formalize proposed recommendations, and we reviewed three written statements submitted by the public in advance of this meeting. And based on our individual experience and expertise of this committee, which is vast, I must say, and the reason we were appointed to this advisory board. Let me start by saying the advisory board strongly supports the CDFI Fund's goals of ensuring that CDFIs lend responsibly and serve low-income people and people of color equitably. So we're certainly in favor of taking a look at the certification and making appropriate changes. CDFI certification should foster a diversity of CDFI types and activities and geographies and allow for innovation that supports the growth and reach of CDFIs. The CDFI Fund has a responsibility to keep certification standards high and to prevent untrustworthy and dishonest financial service providers in low-wealth communities from becoming certified CDFIs. It's an important brand and should be retained. The committee applauds the work of the fund in seeking to further define, improve, and strengthen the certification guidelines in a changing financial environment. I should say that substantial agreement exists among the committee members and among most CDFIs regarding the proposed changes. My short presentation today and our memo focuses on the key issues of the proposed certification changes that could negatively affect existing CDFIs or potential new CDFIs. It doesn't really focus on the many excellent recommendations in the proposed new certification. We're really trying to point out where could there be potential problems. As I was doing this too, I reflected on my experience over many decades at this point in the field, and it's helpful to go back to the starting point when thinking of certification. CDFIs were created in large part because the populations it serves have been excluded from participating in financial markets. Often that exclusion occurred because borrowers didn't meet certain standardized underwriting criteria that define the field. Now, when we try to standardize good behavior, we often run into a problem. Standardization, when you think about CDFIs, is often a bad word. It's like we standardize and that allows more exclusions. CDFIs, if you look at innovation over time, often innovate by developing non-standard products. So we can't just regulate those products away through certification. Now, to be clear, nobody's trying to do that. What we really focus on in these proposed certification guidelines is the law of unintended consequences. That is when a regulation could actually have the opposite of its intended effect. And so what we really, and this is the key point here, is how can we allow flexibilities for CDFIs? And in many instances, what we'll recommend is give CDFIs a chance to present why a non-standard approach makes sense. That is, there are certain certification rules that we'll go over that would actually impede the ability of CDFIs to do the good work they're doing, even though that's not the intention. And so what I really want to do is focus on a few of those. Now, I've been given about 10 minutes, and I've already used about two of them. So I have 8 points I want to make in 8 minutes. That's sort of like, just off the top of my head, that's sort of like Steph Curry, right? 8 points in 8 minutes. Actually, he could score a lot more than that, but it's the best I could come up with off the top of my head. So my comments today, due to time limitations, are selective and don't include the full range of recommendations, but really a few representative examples of where unintended consequences or unintended side effects occur because of a certification standard that's being proposed here. So let's start by looking, number one, at the ability to repay requirements for mortgage lenders. While CDFIs are exempt from the ability to repay qualified mortgage rule established by the Consumer Finance Protection Board, product protections considered consistent with the ATR QM rule should be required for any CDFI that's involved in mortgage lending. That is, CDFI should be held to a standard where all loans are underwritten based on a borrower's ability to repay, and mortgages should meet the QM standards. At the same time, as with any development finance lending, there will be exceptions. I know from boards I've served on and loan review committees that there are consistently exceptions, particularly in instances where there's a clear community development purpose and no predatory intention is advanced. Rather than a bright line that automatically excludes CDFIs from certification, the fund should allow CDFIs a narrative option to explain why these products have a legitimate community development purpose and how this entity is ensuring the product is affordable. So, for example, interest-only or balloon mortgages, there are instances where there's a clear CDFI purpose, and it's the only way to get a borrower into a product right away that could be refinanced later. Again, just an example. Point number two, clarify income verification of indirect beneficiaries. The proposed certification application doesn't allow an applicant to include loans and investments that primarily benefit a targeted population indirectly, especially for low-income targeted populations. But both the REGAL Act and the CDFI fund regulations are clear that a targeted population may be served directly via loans to members of targeted populations, but also indirectly by, for example, providing employment or services. I mention this because this omission may have repercussions for a variety of lenders, for example, small business lenders. The assessment methodologies listed in the certification application require the CDFI to collect individual or household data from beneficiaries, but it's not feasible to expect a CDFI financing a community facility, for example, to require the facility to collect tax returns or other forms of income verification. Also, for example, this is challenging if a CDFI lends to a small business that's committed to employing low-income people but doesn't have the ability to require income verification from employees or to share that data with the CDFI. This would be burdensome. Similarly, a community facility that serves low-income people may rely on self-reporting to verify income of its users. Another example of income verification where flexibility would be necessary is in the resident-owned manufactured housing co-ops. Financial products delivered to manufactured housing co-ops include pre-development, community acquisition, infrastructure improvement loans, but the borrowers aren't individual homeowners. Rather, the borrowers are not-for-profit corporations organized under state law. So while these are not for-profit corporations, they're tax-exempt charitable corporations. They're not required to report to the federal government on annual charitable mission of serving low-income people. So again, this is similar to the small business and community facilities recommendation that what we're recommending is permit the low-income population comprised of homeowners in land lease manufactured co-ops, for example, to be assessed for low-income status based on self-reported income surveys or by proxy measures, of which there are many. The third point I want to make is about financing entity and what makes a strong financing entity. There have been issues raised about allowing staff time on development services to count towards the financing entity test. Changes to the financing entity test require entities applying for certification to dedicate a predominance of both assets and staff time to provision of financial products, and or financial services. Assets and staff dedicated to development services would no longer count towards these tests, even though to become a certified CDFI, you have to provide these development services. This change ignores the reality of a CDFI lending in which borrowers may require extensive coaching and technical assistance before they're ready to receive capital. For example, CDFIs, in particular native communities and small and rural CDFIs, have raised concerns with us about their ability to meet this financing entity test because a significant part of their financial success is the provision of credit building services. Again, we recommend the fund maintain the most recent requirement that a majority of staff time must be dedicated to a combination of financing activities and development services. Again, we feel this is sort of the unintended consequences that may occur, saying, yeah, we want you to focus on financing. But the reality is for many CDFIs, it takes a while to get to that point, and in many ways, this is the most important service they provide. So this leads to point number four, development services. We're asking that the fund reconsider the narrow definition of development services. The updated definition, we feel, is too narrow. While it's important for certified CDFIs to offer meaningful development services to their customers, again, there's no one-size-fits-all. Let a CDFI make an argument about how it provides these services. Classroom-based training, for example, is not always feasible or accessible way to offer technical assistance. The fund should build more flexibility into this requirement and allow for different models. The proposed certification application also states that, quote, online TA is not allowed. The fund should clarify if this applies to the use of online meetings via Zoom or other video conferencing platforms, which are an adequate and often a very cost-effective substitute for in-person meetings for customers residing in remote locations. Again, we feel that might be an unintended side effect of narrowing the definition. Number five, point number five, is to look at accountability requirements, and in particular, reconsider executive-level requirements for board accountability. Executive-level requirements for CDFI board service may be challenging for some CDFIs. In addition, some markets, non-executive-level staff, such as lending staff, could make valuable contributions to the board of certified CDFI. A second point is the point of allowing service on other qualified boards to demonstrate accountability. The proposed application would eliminate the existing option of utilizing an applicant board member's participation on the governing or advisory board of an unconnected organization as means of demonstrating accountability to a target market. Again, we believe members of a board can offer specific expertise in areas like finance or real estate while demonstrating accountability through meaningful work with other organizations representing and serving low-income people and places. We feel that this guideline should be retained. Point number six, reassess financial conflict of interest policy for board service. The proposed certification application would prevent board members with certain types of financial interest in an organization from being considered accountable to any target market component, as the financial interest may conflict with the board member's ability to represent the interest of the target market. Well, certainly the potential for conflict of interest is valid, and we certainly support that. However, client representation on a CDFI board often provides invaluable insight into the needs, challenges, and opportunities of communities being served and embeds this perspective at the core of the CDFI's influence. Over the past many, many years, it's often been the case, as it is with any conflict of interest, is that if there's a specific conflict of interest for a board member, that board member would recuse themselves from that decision. But it seems like too much to say we're going to exclude anyone who has any sort of board financial interest in an organization, in this case having a loan from the organization, from being excluded. For example, in some rural markets, the local CDFI is the only affordable source of financing in the region. Does this mean we would exclude a borrower from being on the board because they have a loan from the CDFI? Community members shouldn't have to choose between accessing capital from their CDFI or providing valuable service to the board. And there are a number of examples of that. And in particular, credit unions, whose members are also elected to their board, shouldn't be prohibited from getting mortgages or small business loans. If you look at credit union boards, they're by definition elected from their members who are getting financial services and products from the CDFI. So again, allowing the CDFI to explain why they would select a certain board member and why that would still address the accountability requirements without conflict of interest. Kevin's point is to be careful of the impact of conflicting regulations and policies, and particularly talking to the regulated financial institutions. They mentioned issues around ensuring that demographic and household income data collection requirements allow regulated financial institutions to comply with the Equal Credit Opportunity Act and avoid burdening people of color and low-income people with data collection requests that aren't required at mainstream financial institutions. Just in general, and there were a number of issues raised in the comments, we don't want the CDFI fund to have policies and procedures that are actually in conflict with the regulatory requirements that regulated financial institutions, CDFI banks, and credit unions have. I'll just get to my final point now, and that is that CDFI certification is a valued credential relied upon by public and private sector investors. We see more and more frequently investors are saying, are they a CDFI? Are they certified as a CDFI? It's sort of like a good housekeeping seal of approval. And we want it to stay that way. The advisory board commends the CDFI fund for introducing reforms to CDFI certification application that will strengthen accountability to customers and the communities that CDFIs serve. The key, we think, is striking a balance between offering flexibility and maintaining the integrity of the CDFI credential. There are areas where there could be improvement or additional flexibility, as responsible products might look differently based on market conditions on the ground. So again, what we urge here is the CDFI fund to continue to provide flexibility for truly mission-driven CDFIs to develop and tailor financial products and services to best meet the needs of their communities. Thanks, Marla. Let me turn it back to you.
Thanks so much, Michael. Truly appreciate your ability to condense so much information into those 8 points. I would say equally as deftly, if not more so, than Steph Curry. So thank you for that.
I'll remember that compliment.
So this is going to be a little bit challenging as we have many participants on audio only. So it's a little bit difficult to see who is eager to pipe up, but we did want to hold space here for folks to be able to ask questions or provide comments with particular priority to those who did not serve on the subcommittee so that they can share any thoughts that were not captured in the memo and or ask questions about the memo. And then, you know, again, anyone who was on the subcommittee who would like to underscore or just add a comment here, this would be sort of the forum for that. So it looks like we've got about 20 minutes for this, maybe a little bit less to save time to proceed to a vote. So I guess I'll just recommend that folks kind of jump in, and if we're talking over each other, we'll find a way to politely share the mic.
I could start, Marla, if that's appropriate.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Patrice.
Okay. Patrice Kunish. I am the CDFI representative for Native Communities. And in addition to Michael's comprehensive comments, I would like to share a few thoughts about Native CDFIs. Native CDFIs are very concerned about maintaining their ability to serve Native communities and be both responsive to those community needs and be innovative in serving their unique geographic and demographic challenges. Native CDFIs are incredibly excellent sources of an array of financial services, and without this ability, there will be some, I think, some dire consequences. We know that the lack of access to credit and financial services is a key barrier to economic development in Native communities. And recent research has shown that establishing Native-focused community development financial institutions on or near the reservations can substantially improve individual credit outcomes and access to credit. In fact, some of their most successful tools are things that were, you know, Michael's been talking about, financial education programming, credit counseling, and lending. And particularly loan programs specifically designed to build or repair individuals' credit, which can look a little, different, I should say. So I just want to reiterate the need for capital in Indian Country, that Native CDFIs are incredibly responsive to this need, and the proposed changes could greatly impede Native CDFI services, and these unintended consequences, sort of a cascade, could impede development services, financial services, and certainly community-based needs. So thank you to my committee members and for this opportunity to share a few thoughts.
Thank you, Patrice. Would someone else like to comment?
Hi, Marla.
Hi.
I was given some space to see if any non-committee members wanted to raise any comments or points. And for the sake of time, I want to give some comments. But,
yeah. Something.
Hi, everybody. This is Harold Pettigrew, President and CEO for the Opportunity Finance Network. One, Michael, you did a phenomenal job at condensing a lot of comments, and certainly a lot of perspective across the industry. So thank you for not only synthesizing, but as you always have, being the voice for the industry and trying to pull together perspectives that advances the industry. And second, of course, to the CDFI fund as well, just knowing that this is a Herculean task with changes, significant changes not having been made in over 25 years. This is a significant effort, and want to really applaud interim CDFI fund director Marcia Siegel and the rest of the team on trying to strike a balance here. Certainly with ensuring the preservation and the integrity of the brand, which I think we all are in support of, and also just making sure that, as Michael said, the seal of approval is there, that we know when an organization carries the brand of CDFI, that the most important parts of those letters are CD, the community development side of it, and making sure that organizations are committed to doing that, and not by just in what they say, but ultimately in the performance of what they do in the community. And so I think we all have universal agreement in making sure that at least the essence of what's being put forward, you know, is the true desire to preserve the CDFI brand, which we all rely on, because it impacts us all collectively. And so I wanted to applaud the fund and certainly the members of the advisory board for advancing this perspective here. To provide a couple of thoughts, and I agree with the points that Michael lifted up in the report, and look forward to advancing those as well. There were a couple other areas that I wanted to make sure as well to lift up, and this is for me not only from the OFN vantage point where I sit now, but also having run a CDFI. I think some of the points of flexibility is certainly necessary to ensure the CDFIs on the ground have the tools that they need and the space that they need to meet where it may be within community. Second, I think with the points about development services, I think we've seen across whether it's small business supports, housing supports, the connection of development services, and I'll say it a little differently, knowledge capital. That when you pair knowledge capital and financial capital together, it becomes more catalytic. and the ability of allowing development services to be applied or to be counted towards the financing entity test, I think is a critical point, you know, and even just aligning it with federal programs that are appropriate. When you think of agencies like the Small Business Administration and its use of the microloan fund that's getting small business capital to the most needed parts of our country, where the SBA provides technical assistance dollars and loan capital for organizations, for microlenders to deploy that within communities, because it's recognized that it's not just about money. It's also about equipping members within our communities with the knowledge capital that they need or development services so that they can be fully equipped to leverage capital in a way that's catalytic. The second area, or the next area I'll mention, is grants. And I think there's been some mention of that. But over the last number of years, particularly since 2020 and the start of the pandemic, you know, CDFIs have been called to duty to deploy grants, billions of dollars worth of grants and transactions, that I think we need to make sure that our definitions of a financial product allow for the recognition of this activity over the last couple of years. When we say CDFIs, we're talking from banks to loan funds, credit, you know, the full spectrum of organizations that were leveraged to get capital into communities to ensure that they could continue. Grants were a part of that. And if we eliminate that spectrum or that recognition, not only are we not recognizing the efforts of the industry in its fullest representation since 2020, it also may have an unintended consequences as well for the opportunities that we know are to come, specifically with the EPA and the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, where we are talking about $27 billion worth of grant dollars that in one shape or fashion will get down into communities. Now, much of those grant dollars are proposed to be used, you know, to mobilize capital in broader ways, not just grant dollars. But we want to make sure that organizations have the flexibility and the ability to leverage financial products in its fullest means to meet communities where they are. And I think we've learned over the last couple of years that grants are part of that spectrum. And so I want to end it there. I think in, you know, from the points that Michael mentioned that summarizes our activities and perspective, and the paper submitted by OFN as well captures certainly some of our broader perspectives. I just want to applaud again the CDFI Fund. This is a difficult task. And I know as we talk through some of the tenets of the changes to the certification process, that's a deep concern. But I would also hope that we can create space for the CDFI Fund as well to talk through the pathway after release of regulations. Certification changes, just so that as well it's understood not only some of the steps that the CDFI Fund will go through to work with CDFIs if there are concerns and challenges, but also what the environment will be like after working with the industry to ensure there's not unintended negative consequences. So I'll land there, and thank you again, Marla, for convening this group, and thank you again, Michael, for your leadership.
Thank you so much, Harold. I believe Bill Bynum is on the line and would like to comment. I just received a text from him. I cannot hear you. I'm not sure if others are able to hear Bill. Okay, if someone on the administration side could admit Bill into the call, he said he needs to be admitted. While we wait for that to happen, would anyone else like to make a brief comment? We probably have time for one or two.
Hi, Marla. This is Darren Williams. I'd like to make a brief comment. I was also trying to make room for those who were not on the committee, but I appreciate this opportunity.
Great.
Again, this is Darren Williams. I have the pleasure of serving as CEO of Southern Bancorp. We are a family. of CDFIs. We're among the very first CDFIs ever certified back during the original certification, and want to, as Harold did, maybe not as eloquently, but acknowledge the fine work of the CDFI Fund and applaud them for their efforts in this work they've done so far. As one of the oldest and largest and rural CDFIs, Southern completely supports the recertification updates that are designed to protect the CDFI brand. We think that nothing more important than that, so we just appreciate that. As I often say, I choose not to choose between my favorite CDFI. Southern's collection of three different CDFIs, a holding company, a bank, and a nonprofit loan fund, and we want to continue to foster a diversity of CDFI types, activities, and geographies, and that's also consistent with the policies outlined in the industry's recertification process, and just want to applaud their efforts there. In addition to serving as CEO of Southern Bancorp, I have the pleasure now of serving as the chair of the board of the Community Development Bankers Association, Trade Association for CDFI Banks, and I want to, while I don't speak to the CDBA, I want to, directly today I don't speak to them, I want to acknowledge that the CDBA and the National Banker Association, the leading trade association for MBIs, have jointly submitted a comment letter last year about these proposed certification changes, and I just want to, by reference, incorporate those recommendations and offer just a few points to what's already been offered, all of which I agree with. First, as one of the largest rural CDFIs, I want to maybe highlight one of the things that David talked about, Michael talked about, I'm sorry, regarding the impact of proposed changes on particularly on rural communities. 7% of the branches we serve about 56 locations are in rural communities. In 9 of those markets, we're the only bank in town. 55% of our counties, our locations are located in counties that are labor and persistent poor. 40% of those, our locations are predominantly African American census tracts. And more than 40% of our locations are in counties with less than 25,000 people. And so we have a history. We understand and know how to make loans to rural communities, and we think it's important because often in those markets, we're not competing with another, CDFI or even a community bank. We're often competing with a payday lender. In fact, in the state of Mississippi, there are more storefront payday lenders than our McDonald's, Burger King, and Starbucks combined. And in those markets, last year, for example, we had about $800 million in originations, over 7,800 loans. 54% of those are less than $10,000, more than a quarter of those less than $1,000. And so we understand how to make loans there. And so we just encourage CDFI Fund to be careful about blanket prohibitions that have impacts on rural communities in ways that may not have in more urban markets. One, for example, is the mortgage prohibition against balloon payments. Such a prohibition would prevent Ms. Bernita Jackson, who's a 63-year-old school employee who lives in Mississippi, who at 63 became a first-time home buyer because we were able to provide her a loan through our nonprofit loan fund that carried a balloon payment. The only way we could get her into a home was to be able to provide this very flexible capital. Of course, the loan fund couldn't take 30, 40 years interest rate risk, nor could the bank. Also, because of the lack of appraisals in rural communities, there's no ability to really put that loan into a secondary market. So I just want to highlight that. And then proposed rules could have a negative impact on rural communities, particularly as you think about how we define target market. The demand for lending in rural communities is often regional. And to create arbitrary rules or around census tracts may not provide the full support for a rural community that CDFI has been able to do. So I would just encourage the CDFI Fund to be careful and give us plenty of flexibility to allow for rural communities to be properly served. Then finally, I would just highlight one of the proposed policies of the CDFI Fund is to encourage innovation in the types of practices and products that CDFIs offer. And Southern, who's often been a leader in from a technology standpoint, we've created several mobile applications. We have three in the Apple in the mobile stores now that you can actually download. One is trying to really become an alternative to the payday lenders whose interest rates and practices kind of shock the conscience. A blanket prohibition that around certain areas could have a impact of limiting innovation. We created an application that we're testing now called Money on Demand, and it's an alternative to underwriting, and it's an alternative to hopefully payday lenders over time if we can develop this properly. But you borrow small amounts of money, $25, and you pay it, repay it, and then we give you access to large amounts from $25 to $100 to $200, $300, and so on. Almost any amount of interest tied to that could quickly exceed kind of a blanket, 36% prohibition. While we're definitely not wanting to make loans in excess of those rates, we know that loans like that are needed. One, in our marketing, very, very sparse marketing, in a three-week period of time, we had 63,000 people to download this mobile app, which was clear you could only borrow small amounts of money. So the demand is there, and we just encourage a fund to ensure that the rules allow for flexibility, for innovation, where we can compete with and hopefully provide more responsive access to capital and credit through means of mobile technology, which is obviously prevalent today. And so with that, I just want to, again, applaud the work of the CDFI Fund trying to strike the balance between protecting the brand and allowing for greater diversity and innovation in CDFIs, and just appreciate the hard work and fully support the recommendations being made today by the subcommittee, and appreciate the time to offer just a few of our thoughts. Thank you, Marla.
Thank you so much. And I will hand it over to Bill Bynum now. And I just wanted to check in with folks. We did start. I wasn't sure if people were able to hang on a couple of minutes later to kind of make up for that time. I'm not even sure how I can know if people can or can't because so many are on audio. But if you could perhaps indicate to Bill Lutz your availability to do so, that would be helpful. So, Bill Bynum, please share your comments.
Thank you, Marla. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Fantastic. I want to start by thanking you and Dave for inviting me to represent credit unions on the subcommittee and to share perspective of someone who served, I think, roughly 10 years on the advisory board. And also thank Michael for an exceptional job in incorporating an incredibly wide and complex range of input into the recommendations and for capturing the importance of context and flexibility. Michael, Steph Curry has nothing on you. You did a great job. I was honored. I served on the Southern Board, Southern Bank, and I agree with Darren's comments and comments that were made. I also have a loan fund, but the credit union perspective, I think, has been lifted up quite well by Michael's comments. I do want to briefly underscore what I think is the importance of certification to protecting the brand and the mission. And from what I saw after the 2007-2008 financial crisis, had an opportunity to meet with President Obama and work with Treasury officials to help advocate to allow CDFIs to participate in the TARP program, not to bail them out, but to position them as the financial first responders they are to fill gaps in underbanked, under-resourced communities. And until recently, other than the New Markets Tax Credit Program, this was the largest inflow of federal funds into CDFIs. And that was when many community banks in Mississippi became CDFIs, not because they could qualify because they happened to be located in low-income CDFI-eligible areas, not necessarily because they were providing financial services to under-resourced people. And as a consequence today, Mississippi has the second most CDFIs in the nation, 109, 95 of which are community banks or affiliates. And this could and should be a great thing if the accountability is held at a high level. We're in a state where nearly 40% of the population is black, and only 13% of mortgages made by CDFIs went to black borrowers, compared to 17 of all HMDA reported mortgages in the state. And this means that these CDFIs that receive these limited federal funds to close gaps are actually widening racial disparity in wealth. And so, loan funds and credit unions have work to do and should be held in account. But the bank data tell a clear, compelling, and egregious story. And I only make this point because, once again, in response to an economic crisis, billions and billions in federal funds are flowing into CDFI to fill gaps. And we have an opportunity with CDFI certification to make sure that those who receive these precious resources that flow through the fund are held accountable. As has been said, the brand should matter, and CDFI certification has to be structured in a way that allows for the flexibility and innovation. As someone who also works in a persistent poverty, a high persistent poverty region, a third of all the persistent poverty counties in the country are in Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, which are part of our service area. And every persistent poverty county, every majority black county is persistent poverty. And so it's critical that we put safeguards in place that ensure that the primary beneficiary of these resources are not the CDFIs, but rather the people who these CDFIs are supposed to serve. And I think that the work that you all are doing on certification, the funds doing on certification, is on point. I think that the default should be to make sure the resources go to those who need it and to allow those who need flexibility to do some of the innovative things that we've heard talked about and that reflect in the letters are allowed for, but that shouldn't be the default. The default should be making sure the resources go to where they align with the mission. So, again, thank you for allowing me to participate.
Thank you so much, Bill. If others do not have questions or comments, I would like to move for a vote on presenting the memo formally to the CDFI fund. Could I have someone please call for the vote? Was that you, Dave?
Moved.
Great.
That was Harold.
Okay.
I'll second.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at Dave and I'm hearing Harold's voice. So who moved it and who would like a second? You guys can flip a coin. Dave can move it. Harold, do you want to second it?
You got it. There you go.
Fantastic. Thank you both, and thank you so much to the subcommittee and to the overall. Or actually, I should call for an aye. Can I please have hearing from the remainder of the board your affirmation of this vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, well, we will accept this hearing, no abstentions or refusal.
Madam Chair,
yes.
You could, I did want to thank the subcommittee for great work here. To my mind, this project is one of the reasons the advisory board exists, is for this kind of input into the fund. Given my role in Treasury and the decision-making process, I'm going to abstain from the vote, however, so as not to create the impression that we prejudge any of these issues. But I do appreciate all the great work. It's given us a lot to think about as we go back and finish this process.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And thanks to everyone again for bringing us to this point. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Acting Director Marcia Siegel to provide some comments.
Thank you, Marla. This is my first advisory board meeting as acting director of the CDFI Fund. Let me start by introducing myself to those of you who don't know me. I have been at the CDFI Fund for 8 years, the last five of which I have been the deputy director for policy and programs, implementing the CDFI's strategic vision through our programs, the design of our programs and implementation of them. And prior to my work at the CDFI Fund, I also directed the Policy Division and the Office of Affordable Housing at HUD and worked for several years prior to that in the private and nonprofit sector, working with CDFIs, nonprofit organizations, and working for two national community development associations. So I'm excited to be taking on the role as the acting director at this very important time, as people have noted it is. In my capacity as deputy director, I worked with the other deputy director, Dennis Nolan, who's on the line listening, who has been in charge of this and has been at the CDFI Fund for several years, so like over 10 years. So, you know, we have a depth of experience here, and we're applying it as we move forward, and the whole team is excited to be working on the CDFI revisions to the application. I also want to thank the subcommittee so much for your input, and I do want to encourage the subcommittee to continue to provide us with input as we begin to implement the new application, and we look forward to your continued input. I think it will be very helpful. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Marcia. Looks like we actually will be able to end on time. So we've completed our items on the agenda for this meeting. Do any of the advisory board members have any closing business? Take that as a no. So advisory board members, please note that we will be convening our next meeting in person. It will be our first in-person meeting, which I'm so excited for, in Washington, D.C., in either late November or early December. So please watch for an email within the week on possible dates. And in closing, I'd like to say a few words. I'll take no more than 2 minutes that we've got here. So the Community Development Advisory Board and the Subcommittee on CDFI Certification acted quickly over the last 2 weeks to ensure our feedback would be captured, shared, and documented. Throughout this time, our CDFI fund counterparts have been receptive and have worked to ensure that our feedback would be included and on the record as we arrive at the precipice of final changes to the certification process. As mentioned prior, our industry has never been more needed, and it is important we get this right. I'm encouraged by the fund's willingness to include an unprecedented amount of input into their updated certification process, and I'm also encouraged by their willingness to revisit any elements that, once ground tested, present a challenge to CDFIs or the communities we serve. If there is no further business, would someone please move that we adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you, Dave.
Second.
Great. Thank you, Harold. Was that you, Harold?
That was, yep.
All right, you guys are the superstars of the call. All right. Well, I would like to
thank
you for joining us today and my colleagues on the board, and just offer my sincere thanks to our advisory board members for taking the time to meet today, for your willingness over the last 2 months to undertake the work of this subcommittee, and for your service to the CDFI Fund. This meeting of the Community Development Advisory Board is now adjourned at 2:59 p.m. So thank you all so much.
Thanks, Marla. Thanks, everybody.
Look forward to seeing you soon.
That concludes today's call. You may disconnect at this time.
Thanks.